When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Hi, this is comedian and depressed alcoholic James Nokise, and you're listening to Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower, a podcast about headspace and happiness from my safe place, the shower with fried chicken. This episode, I'm talking to New Zealand journalistic legend and massive Public Enemy fan, John Campbell. We'll talk about tackling traumatic stories.
The clutter's in my bones now. The clutter's like marrow. The stories, the sadness, the injustice.
Tackling PC culture.
I just think, actually, given that you don't like PC, go fuck yourselves.
And tackling rugby.
We did alternative rugby commentaries with a very heightened sense of homoeroticism. I mean, really, is there a more homoerotic game in the world than rugby?
Some of this will get a bit real. The language, the subjects. So make sure you're in a safe space with your comfort food. And join us, Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower. John Campbell, serious question to start with.
Yeah.
Are you the baddest motherfucker in all of New Zealand journalism?
Am I? I'd like to be.
Yeah?
Yeah. As I get older, I want to shine light in the corners. So journalists talk a lot about speaking truth to power.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not as much interested in that any longer.
Right.
Because power has access to the media. Power is always talking. Power talks. So power has media managers and PR people, and they put out media releases. I'm kind of interested in the people who are powerless.
Yeah.
For me, that's the really great challenge of journalism now. How do we find them? How do we reflect their voices without being condescending, without being tokenistic or whatever? And so you don't be a bad motherfucker. Those people, you find them and you listen, I think.
And then you're a bad motherfucker to the people.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. And so what's going on here?
See, because you do actually remind me of Jules from Pulp Fiction. Samuel Jackson.
Whoa.
The one who's like, I want to walk
the
earth.
And then before he kills people, he does this bit of scripture.
This big scripture.
Yeah.
You know, and his whole thing is walking the earth and meeting people and being all righteous and helping out. And that's his vibe. I think of you when I think of New Zealand journalism. I think that makes me John Travolta.
That's a nice thing to say.
Thank you, John. That's what I do. Now, what chicken are we having?
Well, this crispy here. This is from number one in Newmarket.
All right, that's
Where? Oh, look at that.
Oh, mate. Nice.
Flip. Look at that. Is that on that? Look at that. What's up, my G? Okay, that looks good. That's good. That's Korean. They're Korean people. I think, actually, I could be wrong, but I actually have a sneaking suspicion they may be almost like cornflakes.
Oh, wow. That's your number one chicken.
Number one chicken by the railway station in Newmarket. Mm. Really, really good.
Oh, man.
Mm, so good. No grease. Mm. Actually, I don't want to shame KFC, but KFC, if you squeeze this chicken, no grease comes out. Look at my fingers. Hardly any grease on them.
There's no shame on KFC here.
No.
They bring shame on themselves sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm a bit concerned about your clothes with all of this.
Yeah. In what respect?
Just in terms of getting grease on your jeans.
Yeah, and I'm wiping my hands on my jeans.
I know.
I tell my son not to do.
Do you want a paper towel?
Well, I've got this one.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you very much. I can do it through my hair later.
I mean, I love the fact you've come into my safe space in a suit.
I
mean, I know you've got work in the mornings and that, but I don't think I've ever seen you outside.
No, it's dress-ups for me. I feel very safe in a suit.
Yeah?
Yeah. So the thing about being a white dude, middle-class white dude, is that if anyone sees you in a suit, they think there's a middle-class white dude in a suit.
Yeah.
Whereas if I wore a T-shirt or ripped jeans or whatever, I'd be making a statement about myself that would be defining in ways that I just don't have the energy for.
Right.
So wearing a suit is just, it's almost like an invisibility cloak.
Yeah, okay.
No one looks at a white dude in a suit. Because 98% of white dudes of my age in my class dress like this.
Right.
So you just think, oh.
So is it kind of like a mental health thing of just like keeping the drama low?
It probably is. I mean, I've never put it in those terms before, but sometimes I find the effort of being scrutinized and being on show kind of exhausting.
Yeah.
And so I'm not going to add to it in any way. Yeah. I'm not going to do anything that gives people anything else to say. Oh, look, there's John Campbell. Look, what the hell is he wearing?
Yeah.
So I just dress like this, and no one is ever going to ask that question.
It's weird you said it, though, because as a person of colour who travels around foreign cities, I completely relate to this. Mm. One of the things my mother, bless her, used to tell me off was, why are you wearing hoodies? Like, sure, if you're in Wellington, you feel comfortable wearing a hoodie, but why are you going to cities like London? You know how they look at people wearing hoodies. Why give them an excuse? And she was so concerned about me walking around wearing a hoodie. And to be fair to my mum, London's rules on young people with hoodies, very harsh. And attitude's very, oh yeah.
And is it predominantly people of colour who wear hoodies in London? Yeah. So is that a racist thing?
It's not predominantly people of colour who wear hoodies in London. It's predominantly people of colour who wear hoodies who are stopped
in London.
And my mum, bless her, wasn't trying to reinforce stereotypes, was just saying, this is the way the world is. Why make it easier for them to get you?
And this is an absolute fascinating discussion, isn't it? So do you think I'm going to make life easy for myself because I don't want to be harangued? Or are you going to think, actually, fuck you.
Yeah.
You know, how dare you?
Yeah.
And are you going to wear the hoodie because you have every right to wear a hoodie?
And I think that's an ongoing discussion in many cultures.
Yeah, it is.
You know,
there's a great short story I just read, I think, called Friday Black, by a young American writer whose name's completely slipped my mind, but he talks about getting dressed in the morning thinking, today I'm just going to dial down the blackness. Seriously, I'm going to wear a Ralph Lauren shirt or whatever.
Yeah.
And he rates himself on a scale of 1 to 10, how black am I today? Whereas I, every day, I'm just the same degree of whiteness. I never think about that shit. That's privilege, isn't it? That's the very definite of a privilege. Never having to think, if I dress like this, am I going to be harangued when I walk through the city? I mean, we were talking about this the other day, weren't we? The discretion, we were talking about this at work, the discretion that police have to now not prosecute people with dope. So let's think. They pick up some kids in a VW Golf driving back to Herne Bay. They got a little bit of weed in the glove box. Are they more or less likely to take those kids into the top cop shop? There's some kids in a bashed up $800 car that's heading out south, some brown kids. We would hope that it's completely 50-50. But we all know still the weighted probability is that the brown kids are going to be more likely to get the trip to the cop shop than the white kids, aren't they?
I mean, statistically, in my life, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. But you've got an affinity with the Pacific. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think that comes from, you went to Wellington Coal?
Yeah, I did.
When if you go to Wellington Coal, today?
So 70s, there was no brown kids at Wellington Coal. Yeah. Maybe 20?
Right.
And I didn't know any brown kids. I grew up in, Mount Vic, Roseneath.
Yeah.
But I didn't know brown kids.
But, you're at Wellington Coal, and for people who don't know Wellington, you go a kilometre up the road, you're in Newtown. Mm. That's where all my family was.
Yeah, but were they in the zone? Did they go to Wellington Coal?
Oh, wrong tie.
Mm.
You know, once Wellington Coal got serious about rugby, they were definitely in the zone.
Yeah.
Did you play?
Yeah, I love rugby.
I know you're. I think you're well documented as a Hurricanes fan.
Yeah. My son plays. One of the joys of my life is watching my son play rugby on Saturdays.
Yeah,
he's 15. Yeah, it's beautiful. It makes me. It's just watching my daughter do her dance and my son plays ballet are some of the happiest moments in my.
Yeah.
Really, truly, in my life.
And what's your position? Your son play
halfback.
Halfback.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Crafty.
Yeah, he is. He's starting to become a really good halfback.
Yeah.
I'm proud of him.
He's
brave.
We don't hear much about your family.
No, I don't talk about them. They have the right to privacy.
Hmm.
Yeah, they just have the right to have a life that is independent of who their father is. They didn't choose to have me as a father.
Yeah.
There are times when, we're out and there have been many, many, many occasions where having me as a dad has provided a terrible weight on whatever occasion we were having.
All right.
Yeah, we were at Eden Park recently and we were queuing up. My son and I were queuing up for a hot dog or whatever before the game.
Mm-hmm.
Two guys, just two total assholes in front of us,
started
talking very loudly about how much they dislike me.
Oh, fuck them.
And it absolutely ruins your experience of the game. And my 15-year-old son is standing there. Of course he's overhearing it.
You
think, what do we do? Do we go home? Do I say something to them? Do we just pretend it's not happening? And that's a kind of constant, so you don't want to add to it by saying, hey, everyone meet my kids. Fuck that. They're entire of themselves, they're great kids and I'm proud of them. They deserve to have lives independent of who their father is, right?
Yeah.
All kids do.
I think that's one of the untold pressures of people in the public life.
Yeah. It's not for me, I've never ever conflated I've never confused my private life with my public life. I've never ever done a Women's Day spread at home. I've never, I've never ever, when we were selling, although we only ever sold our house once, but when we were selling it, we didn't say to the hero, come and do a feature, and he, you know, and then you've, you know, so you, you know, I didn't do any of that. I just, you just don't. You've got to have a private life, otherwise this job will drown you.
Is that, and so that is a mental health strategy for you?
Absolutely, it is. It is. Yeah. So that when you go home, it's a safe place.
Yeah, right.
Or it's just not a scrutinised place.
Yeah. What is a safe place for John Campbell?
The car.
Yeah?
Yeah. Listening to music.
Listening to music?
Yeah.
Right.
Home is a safe place.
Yeah.
Friends, safe place.
Mm-hmm.
Listening to music is my safe. It was really my safe place.
Yeah. What kind of music we're talking about?
I listen to two types of music. I listen to very, very sad kind of indie stuff. I used to listen to a lot of Flying Nun too. I still do. So I like Jingle Jangle, kind of adult pop music that sounds like nursery rhymes, really. And then I like the sad music, mostly sung by women.
Oh, yeah.
And I like hip hop.
Hip hop?
Yeah, a lot.
Okay. What era are we talking
about? Oh, no, I like...
What era?
Yeah, I think I don't... I think one of the... I think I don't like classic hits.
Yeah.
I'm just not interested in them. Mm. And even though I like old school hip hop and used to listen to it all the time, I'm just not that interested in it because it's been.
Right.
Whereas for me, I think one of the profound things about hip hop is the risk they're taking, the audacity, the capacity. Mm. You know, I'm thinking of... you know, there's a song, the second song on Tyler, the Creator's Flower Boy album or whatever it's called, where he starts off with a little bit of what's almost like an American songbook, almost orchestral, and then he goes into sort of Californian dream pop, and then he goes into hip-hop, and I just think, where are these kids coming up with it? I mean, how? And so it's the audacity, it's the invention, it's the epiphany of discovery.
Yeah.
Hearing a song again is never as good as hearing a wonderful song for the first time. Mm. So I just search and search and search the whole time, and I share that with my daughter.
Yeah.
So she'll say, Dad, have you heard the new ASAP Rocky? Have you heard that? And you just, and it's really, it's fair. I love it.
Have you thought of doing a podcast yourself of John Campbell's hip hop reviews?
Yeah, well, I love music, but I think it's because it's a safe place for me.
Yeah.
Then I don't want to make it a public place.
Yeah, good on you, man.
So I really love it. And when I'm listening to, you know, Tiny Ruins or Aldous Harding or Sharon Van Etten, with the new Big Thief album out, I like very achingly sad music. And that's a very safe place too for me.
I can relate to that because I love my hip hop, especially conscious rap. I grew up in the eras of like, you know, Common and Mos Def and that. And so you see people coming through now. It's really good. Who was I listening to? Weirdly enough, I was listening to Nipsey Hussle and DJ Khaled.
Yeah.
They've got this lovely new track that's just come out. DJ Khaled cracks me up as a genuine hip-hop thing because it's just he's a great hype man. I feel like people don't realize he's the new Flavor Flav.
Mm.
He's just a big hype man.
Well, that's a big rap to call someone the new Flavor Flav.
Every time I hear him on a track, I go, you're slightly insane, but this song is really good.
Did you ever see Public Enemy live?
No.
I did.
Really?
Yeah, unbelievable.
When did you see him?
Oh, many, many, many years
ago. Oh, so you saw Prime Public Enemy?
Yeah, Prime Public Enemy. Ooh. Yeah, boy, oh boy. And I still think, you know, I still think Fight the Power.
Oh, incredible.
In terms of a song, and, you know, Elvis was the hero to most, but he never said to me, straight up racist, that's like I was simple and plain, fuck him and John Wayne.
Yeah.
I'm black and I'm proud, I'm hyped and I'm amped. And then the greatest line, one of the greatest lines in the history of music, most of my heroes don't appear on those stamps.
Yeah.
And in terms of telling the story of what it's like to be black, have your culture appropriated, have Elvis get rich out of music that was essentially kind of originated by, you know, Chuck or whoever, and then to exist in the margins and not even receive the acknowledgement, not even receive the credit. I just thought, wow, as a piece of songwriting, the first time I heard that, I thought, who else is writing music like this? Mm. No white folk are. Well, actually, punk rock wrote music like that.
Right.
That angry.
Yeah.
And that holding the world to account, that saying this order is not satisfactory.
Mm.
But then, since then, I think hip-hop has just owned the field.
And also, I'll just say, I think the Public Enemy were great storytellers in introducing us who are not African-American to understand what the African-American experience was. Like to go, hey.
Yeah, me.
Yeah.
I couldn't be less African-American, could I? You're looking into the window, you're looking through the window.
Yeah, for Black American people, it's cathartic because they're hearing it. And for the rest of us, it's educational because we go, oh, man. That raw anger.
Anger.
You're not renowned for having raw, shouty anger.
No, I've done it a couple of times.
But I know you've got, I know you've got that quiet anger.
Yeah.
Because I see it come through.
Yeah.
Do you carry anger?
Yeah, absolutely. But I just am good at dealing with it.
Yeah. What do you do? What do you do with it?
Oh, just work hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, you know, was it John Lydon said anger is an energy, right? Public image.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you just, okay, how am I going to So it's, of all the forms of anger, the most useless is hitting someone. The second most useless is yelling at someone. So what are the useful forms of anger? And I think it's work. Just tell the stories. So that the thing that's making you angry at least gets illuminated. The thing that makes me most angry is now is disadvantage that we don't acknowledge. So the glib kind of shit that life is a level playing field, or the glib kind of shit that everyone can pull them up by their bootstraps if only they try hard enough, that's just crap. Some people actually are so seriously disadvantaged that actually they need help, or they need the acknowledgement of the impossibility almost. And the other thing is that the people who refuse to acknowledge that and will say things in response to me saying that, they'll say, oh, that's PC gone mad. And I just think, actually, given that you don't like PC, go fuck yourselves. Because, you know, seriously, it's not PC gone mad. Yeah. Actually, it's just an adult acknowledgement of the fact that life is tougher for some people than others. How are we going to respond to that?
Eating fried chicken in the shower when you have to eat and wash on the go.
Are you a Samoan chief yet?
No, I'm not.
Do you think they'll make you one? I mean, I know Samoans want to, but do you think one of the current prime ministers
No.
Is it weird having the Samoan prime minister as a nemesis?
Yeah. Although, when the All Blacks went to Samoa, and he was very kind about the contribution Campbell Live had made to that happening.
Oh, really?
He was unbelievably generous. I felt immense pride, actually, because I was there, and he thanked us when he was speaking to everyone up here, and I felt really proud of that. But, yeah, Mr. Tuilaepa and I don't necessarily get along, whatever. And somewhere after the tsunami, there were just so many stories. You were with a man when he found the body of his three-year-old girl.
Oh, God.
And the awful thing is that this is just a shattering moment of... And then you've got to work. You've got to follow... So you are absolutely present. You absolutely immerse yourself in the moment, and then the only way to survive that is to just keep going forward, to keep working. Otherwise, you drown under the stories.
Do you have to compartmentalize to get through that? What's your technique for
work? Do more work. Just always
just
do
move
more
on
work.
To the next.
Yeah, because it's the contemplation and the dwelling. It's the moment you stop. Am I allowed to swear on this show?
Yeah, of course you are.
The moment you stop, you're fucked.
Right.
So if you don't stop, you're not fucked.
We literally did Public Enemy about 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we did. But you don't, so you just always work.
Yeah.
Always. The energy saves me, I think.
Yeah. Is there a risk of, I'm using a term I'm not qualified to use, but psychological accumulation?
Absolutely. I would think there's a high risk of that.
How do you deal with that?
Just keep working.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You don't declutter?
No.
Right.
No, I've never decluttered. Been a journalist for a long time now.
Yeah.
The clutter's in there. The clutter's in my bones now. The clutter's like marrow. The clutter, the stories, the sadness, the shit you see, the injustice, the people that you should have been able to help more, they're right in my bones now. But I don't know what the alternative is. You drink or self-medicate or something? I don't really.
I don't recommend it.
No. I mean, Yeah. That's not me being clear, but I don't think I'm sorry.
No.
It's great. I'm delighted you've stopped drinking.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
And so that's not an answer. Getting out of it's not an answer because I need to do journalism, otherwise I go nuts. Becoming cynical is not an answer because you don't want cynical journalists. So I just keep, as long as you go forward.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, there are days. I used to, when I was coming, sometimes when you travel home from something, at the end of a long day or at the end of a sad day or at the end of a heavy day and you're on the plane, that's when you're really vulnerable. That's when you suddenly, there's nowhere to go, you can't work, there's no one to talk to, there's nothing to do, there's no escape, there's no end, there's nothing, there's no force field of energy you can create to keep the thing, the event itself at bay. So what I was doing was buying a big packet of jet planes or wine gums or whatever and just shoving sugar into them. Seriously, eating just sugaring myself up.
Right.
So that I would just have a sugar energy rush on the plane.
Yeah, and then just crash.
And then just get home and then just go straight to sleep. But I stopped doing that too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why was that?
just because you can't eat that much sugar.
Well, this is true.
Yeah, I mean, I was doing that often if I had a heavy day so that I could get home and be ready to be a civilized or decent or engaged man when I get home. I would eat a big one of those $5 or $6
packs. I mean, if you go to Samoa and come back with diabetes, you're doing a great disservice.
That's right. Yeah.
Do you just move forward now?
Constantly.
Is that your main thing?
Yeah, that's why I had to go back to dailies. Because I left dailies because I thought I had enough of dailies. So I did 7 years on 3 News, 10 years on Campbell Live, and 2.5 years on Chapman. I thought, well, I'm exhausted by dailies. But actually not doing dailies is more exhausting for me. I just have to work.
How are you with silence?
Not great.
Yeah. Is that why something that you worry about, finding those silent moments, or when they come upon you, you just...
No. I don't... You know, what did Socrates say? The unexamined life is not worth living.
Yeah.
I find introspection doesn't serve me very well.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I just... So I really... This is not me trying to avoid the question or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just this is a really honest response. As long as I keep working, I'm fine.
Right.
As long as I, so as long as I can lose myself in the job and do the job as well as I can, and then I can do it again tomorrow and again the next day and again the next day, I'll be fine. It's when I stop that I'll worry about myself.
With that in mind... Can I ask about when you've left jobs?
Yeah. Well, I hardly ever leave jobs.
Well,
I was at TV3 for 24 years,
yeah.
And then the job left me.
What happens then?
It was terrible. It was terrible.
And how's that with your mental health when that kind of thing happens? Because that's a different sort of trauma.
Yeah, it is. I think I was just tired. For all sorts of reasons, one of the problems with, see, I'd love to talk to you about that, but the problem is then you suddenly read it getting written up somewhere, you know, so you do, and I just don't, you know.
I understand that.
So it was tough. It was really tough. My family bought me a dog to keep me company.
Yeah.
I've become very fond of the dog. I wasn't initially. I slightly resented his presence.
I have to change my metaphor. You're the John Wick of New Zealand politics.
Yeah, yeah. Whoa. So I became fond of the dog, but I wasn't at first. And then I realised after only a couple of months that the only response was to get back to work.
Right.
I thought I'd have a break, but I need to get back to work. So I went to RNZ. And then I was at RNZ for a couple of years, and now I'm at TVNZ. But then at TVNZ, I was a roving reporter. But, man, there wasn't enough roving and reporting.
Well, I mean, it is New Zealand.
Yeah.
One can only rove and report.
That's right. So I thought, right, I'm just going to go back to dailies.
Right. What about the weather? Could you be a weatherman?
No. Doesn't matter the weather. The weather is what it is.
The weather is what
you know, I mean, sometimes it's terribly unfair, but there's no terrible human injustice in weather. Is it? The weather doesn't punish people because of their ethnicity or the socioeconomic position. The weather doesn't, you know, confirm privilege or
You can't shine a light on the weather.
No, you can't.
Yeah.
How dare you today, Mr. Sutherland? How dare you do that?
I mean, I'd love to see you do a couple of weather reports just to do that.
Yeah, give it a go.
I won't pressure the question anymore. I think I'm just mainly curious from a mental health point of view, like when the silence is forced upon you, when the work is forced upon you, how you respond to that. Because it seems to me that if you've got a large workload, another thing you're in is control of your environment and your situation.
Yeah,
so when that's taken away from you, what are your tactics for dealing with that and coming back to a place of control?
Don't know.
Just natural.
No, just work.
Just work.
So,
are you a workaholic?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, that's all right.
Maybe. Am I a workaholic? Yeah, probably. Yeah, almost certainly, aren't I? I don't know many people. I work unusually hard.
Right.
And I always have. Maybe because I'm a control freak. Maybe because I'm really uptight. Maybe because I'm a workaholic. Maybe because I find identity in my work. Maybe because my work matters to me and I want to do it as well as I possibly can. Maybe it's the fear of failure or the consequences of failure. I think if I don't work hard enough, then... So all of the above, I guess.
Is there a pride? Is there a pride?
Yeah, I suppose there is. So that wasn't one of the reasons it sprang to mind.
Hmm.
I'll often say to people, you can trust me.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell the truth. I will do your truth justice. And when afterwards you realise that they think you did,
mm-hmm.
when you manage to shine a light into a corner and people come up to you, you know, 4 days later and say, oh, I never thought of that before. Gosh, who knew? That's a good moment.
Yeah.
Eating fried chicken in the shower. It's always easier to fight the power on a full stomach.
You haven't eaten any chicken?
I do have to eat more chicken. I'm worried I'm going to end up with gout or something.
Yeah. Well, that would be a workplace injury, wouldn't it? Would it be a
workplace ACC?
Yeah, unless, no, but it's not ACC because it's sustained exposure to chicken. That's not ACC. What you need is a piece of chicken to fall on your foot. And then that's ACC.
Just be the final episode. It'd be like, oh, there's chicken. This is why my big toe hurts.
Dear ACC.
One of the things you're known for is as man on the spot. You see it and you go, like that shine a light thing.
Yeah.
You get the torch and you go running towards that.
Yeah, I do.
You keep going back into these big trauma things.
Yeah, I do.
So I want to ask you why.
Yeah. Why do I keep going back?
Why do you keep going back? Because, like, heck, man. I don't know if you're aware, but that's some pretty serious shit you're viewing.
Yeah, it is.
And I have friends in media who've seen, you know, they work with raw footage.
Yeah.
Not the stuff we see on TV, the raw stuff.
Yeah.
And you're there live.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. I was at the CTV building all night.
Mate.
Well, I got there late because we had to get down from Auckland, but I was there all night. And in Samoa, I was there, and you see people, you see bodies and all that kind of stuff. Why do you go back? It's not, you don't go back for that. I'm not one of those. I'm not a storm chaser.
Mm.
You just go back because people tell you their stories.
Mm.
And the amazing thing is I do it for so long now.
Mm.
I've been doing it for so long that when I turn up, if I turn up and you just go, oh, as a Samoan person, you'd probably call me Campbell.
Yeah.
Yeah, see you again. It's Campbell. And so Pacifica, I always know, when people yell out in the street, that if someone goes, oh, Campbell Live, almost certainly Pacifica.
Yeah.
If someone goes, oh, there's that asshole, they're almost certainly a certain type of white guy, you know. Oh, and then people who are just, you know, so anyway, you turn up and then people think, I'm going to tell him my story. I'm going to tell him my story because they know. So, you know, that's a privilege. When people tell you their story, when they trust you and you do their trust justice, what an incredible, you know, I don't know, people always, I don't know, it's a privilege. It's an amazing experience.
Is there a weight? Is there a weight that comes with it?
Yeah, responsibility comes with it.
Yeah.
You can't be, you can never be reckless with them, with people. The thing I like least in journalism is when people punch down.
Mm.
I don't like it.
This we share in comedy as well.
Yeah.
It's a similar
vibe. Yeah, that's right. It is. It's identical.
Yeah.
In fact, punching down is not funny, is it?
No. It shouldn't be.
No. And different people can punch down in different ways. If you're gay, you can use the word queer. If you're African-American, if you want to use the N-word. So there's different ways that you can reflect the experience of your communities. But the experience I have as a privileged, middle-class, well-paid white man is that any punching down I do is going to be revolting.
Mm.
And grotesque and inappropriate. So you have to be respectful to people's lives.
But I mean, when you go into a situation, is there a part of your brain that goes, back in the day, would you have been like, oh, I better have the jet planes ready for when I'm flying back from this?
Or, yeah, probably. Or during the day, the jet planes.
But it's like,
or really swearing, or just get into the car.
Yeah, and just let loose.
I'll tell you what, I talked about a car being a safe place.
Mm-hmm.
A car's a really safe place with the crew.
Yeah, right.
So you would just get in the car with the crew and everyone will just unload just the foulest, most appalling, completely inappropriate language. What the And then you get back to base and you've got it's all gone and you're ready to go again. You're ready to edit.
Right.
Or you go in, or the editors I've worked with, either constantly I'm just going, fuck, you know, but then you just... The work saves you. The work always saves you.
See, but that's what we were talking about before when you were like, I don't really have a way of flushing it out. That sounds like a flush to me.
Yeah, yeah, it's a big noise. A lot of noise in the car.
Do you work with the same crew?
Campbell Live, we work with, on Campbell Live in Auckland and in Christchurch, where we did a lot of this work. Yeah, there's a small number of full-time camera people that you work with over and over, and you trust them. You trust their judgment. You trust that they're going to behave decently.
Mm.
You trust that they're going to not get in people's faces. You trust that they have, at the same time, you think, James is crumbling now, and we need to get the fuck out of here. We need to, this is no longer appropriate to roll in his face. You understand that your cameraman or woman is having exactly the same thought and is just starting to pull back. Sometimes they've even just unilaterally buttoned off, and you absolutely know the people you're working with.
So with someone like you who's got a massive stressful job, is that really important to have
I'm thinking
even if you're in an office, all right, and you've got a high price job, having that circle around you of people
you can totally trust,
you can look at, and not just trust from a work point of view, but with your own mental state, who'll see you and
go. Yeah, you're right. And you don't hear the stories back.
Yeah.
You don't hear the stories back. I think of a guy like Grant Finlay, who was a cameraman on Campbell Live.
Mm.
And we, or Jonesy, or, you know, I don't know, you travel the world with them. Grant was young, so he called me Big Dog and I called him Little Dog.
Great.
And we would listen and we would get in the car and just put up hip hop, just blasting hip hop. And he'd say, "Have you heard this one, Dog?" And I'd go, "No, Dog, play me this one." And I'd say, "Have you heard this one?" Just full knacker, just almost screaming along with the lyrics.
Yeah.
And in the 20 minutes it took you to get back to base or wherever you were cutting, if we were on the road and somewhere in the world or whatever, everything is kind of, it's... Yeah. You've lanced the boil, out it goes.
Eating fried chicken in the shower. 1989, a number, another summer, get down, sound of a funky drummer.
I'm just going to wait now and eat some chicken, James.
Oh, God. I've been hungry.
Yeah, I know. There's also, I think under the Fair Trade Descriptions Act, given the title of this podcast, you actually have to eat some chicken. You just can't not just fucking
don't
sit here with it as a
prop. Come into my safe space and call me out on chicken, John Campbell.
No, well, but you didn't. Yeah. Can't just sit here with it as a prop.
I don't care if you're a Samoan chief, don't
it's call a, me yeah, out. Yeah. Samoan chief.
Would you take the title?
Fuck yes, in a heartbeat. Yeah. I love Samoa. I don't know why do I love Samoa so much? Why do I love it?
Because we're the best.
Samoans aren't.
And I say that to you as a Samoan.
But Samoans aren't, you know, Samoans aren't sycophantic. Like, you know, when Herne Bay goes to Fiji.
Yeah.
So Hembe goes to Fiji and they say, "Oh, they love your children. Oh, the Fijians, they love your children." No, they fucking, well, they might love your children, but actually you're paying them $20 an hour to look after the children and they know what side their bread's buttered on. No one ever says that about Samoa, do they? No one ever says, "Oh, the Samoans love your children." Because actually the Samoans love their own children.
Mm.
But then, so I like the fact Samoa's got a bit of strut. Like fucking chest out, we're the men, we're the women.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
You're very self-aware. Do you know that?
It's come to me lately.
Come to you lately?
Yeah.
How did it come to you?
Oh, I don't. There wasn't a.
Just a gradual thing that's developed over the years.
Yeah, I just realised. It took me a long time to understand.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I look at some other broadcasts, and I'm not going to name them. I'm really not. And I think to myself,
don't you bring that heat to eating fried chicken in the
show? No. But I think to myself, you don't know what it's like to not be you.
Mm.
And I think because I've worked so much in the field and incrementally over the past 20 years have had an understanding of what it's like to not have a life like mine. And life is a profoundly unlevel playing field. And if we don't understand that and acknowledge it, we're either thick or we're lacking in empathy. And all the time I have to remind myself, all the time I have to say, well, that would be my expectation or my experience, but what about people who aren't like me? And all the time I have to remind myself to remember that men like me have built the world in our image and created power structures that reflect and preserve our position. And you just have to, all the time. And there wasn't a moment. I don't know. I can't remember a single lightning bolt moment.
Because 20 years you've been doing this?
Journalism?
Yeah.
30 years this year.
30 years this year?
Is that right? 1989 I started at RNZ as a cadet.
Amazing.
30 years. Boy, cadetships are grounding things. So you do the work no one else wants to do. I did that for 2 years and then TV3 offered me a job.
Yeah.
In 91.
So what were you trained in? What's your background? Who are you, John Campbell?
Yeah, I did an honours degree in English Lit.
English Lit?
Yeah.
You're an English Lit major?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I love English Lit.
Did you go into that from high school?
Yeah, straight to Vic from high school.
Straight to Vic from high school, English Lit. Oh, God, what, like Chaucer and...
No, modern
English. Oh, modern English Lit.
Yeah, mostly, I mean, English Lit's a bit of a misnomer. American Lit's my thing, I love it.
Oh, what, like Fitzgerald and...
Yeah, absolutely. The novelists, the poets, William Carlos Williams and E. Cummings and...
Yeah.
Yeah, I love... The way they had, the red wheelbarrow. William Carlos Williams, so much depends upon the red wheelbarrow glazed with rainwater beside the white chickens. And when he wrote that, poetry was still about rarefied and high things. It was still about big concepts, religion or God or, you know, and people said, well, how can that possibly be a poem? That's not a poem. He says, it's a poem because I say it is. So in a way, Cummings and William Carlos Williams and stuff were as revolutionary as Picasso and Miro. They were kind of reinventing what, you know, the possibility for... And I remember just thinking, wow, the audacity of calling that a poem. Isn't that exciting? Because I was very well behaved. I was a very good boy.
Do you think that feeds into your love of hip-hop and innovation?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, the really exciting thing about hip-hop is that this is...
Oh.
Ooh.
There we go. That's my, that's our little alarm that we've been talking without moving.
Right.
I have to keep eating chicken. All
right,
that
right, right.
Up.
So that...
I also love a cliffhanger.
So this is... imagine if I'd been dead then. Imagine if the light came back up. You're fucking sitting here on your own. And you just... My God! Who done that? And then the curtain. The curtain did a little rustle. And then you... Imagine. Fuck, what a podcast that'd be. I would have... I'll tell you what, though. Just if that happens, I'd open with that scene. I wouldn't fucking... I wouldn't put it... Well.
I made a mistake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Whoa.
John Campbell dies in this episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Keep listening to find out how it happened.
Fucking hell.
We have a new soundtrack from Tyler, the Creator.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The four.
Oh, God. The amount of national voters we get listening to this podcast straight off that.
Imagine.
He killed John Campbell. My God.
We always knew he was...
David Seymour calling me up. What was the secret?
Yeah, we always knew he was one of us.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the blue gown.
Yeah. The blue smoke. I mean, I know you're pretending this is a dressing gown, but it looks like a smoking jacket, doesn't it?
It does. It does. I think that's why I've got... I mean, it is a dressing gown, but I think I've got one that looks like a smoking jacket. Walking that line.
You look like something from Brideshead Revisited, don't you?
I'm the Jeremy Irons of Radio New Zealand.
Yeah.
I'm just walking in going, tell me of your faults.
Yeah.
Tell me. I find that kind of fascinating. Because at school, were you interested in journalism?
No, I didn't even know. I didn't really. I never thought about it, ever. I went to Wellington College and that wasn't great for me.
Right.
Yeah, it was old school back in those days. I mean, you're right. You know, people who rail against political correctness and all of that, forget what an ugly, awful, lacking in generosity world we were. People who are nostalgic for New Zealand in the past aren't brown and aren't gay and aren't women, by and large. I mean, really the only people who are nostalgic are white folk for whom, you know, actually they don't really like the process of sharing the sandpit, basically. And Wellington College was, look, I think probably I could have tried way harder to fit in. Right. And I sensed that I was a slightly square peg in a slightly round hole, and so I made myself even, you know. But you know, the strap and the cane.
Did you get strap and cane?
Yeah, of course. And you just think,
of course. I don't think anyone thinks of John Campbell getting the strap and the cane. Just except maybe Helen Clark.
But you think, who is this person? Well, I mean, some guy's caning my ass with a piece of bamboo. Who the fuck is he? And maybe, I don't know, maybe some kind of tiny latent sense of power unbalance or something. I don't know whether that made me. But I went to Victoria University and I discovered student radio.
Right.
And the joy.
Did you do student radio?
Yeah, I was Sparky Plug.
You were Sparky Plug?
On Radioactive with my friend Jimmy Scott, who was Friendly Brains.
You were Radioactive?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah, shit, it was so much fun.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
What was your time slot?
We did alternative rugby commentaries.
Yeah,
we did them in the 80s.
Amazing.
We really did. We did alternative rugby commentaries with a very heightened sense of homoeroticism. Because, I mean, really, is there a more homoerotic game in the world than rugby?
No, not
men lying on top, beautiful, fit, lithe, sweating men lying on top of each other.
There is an amazing Scottish commentator. He used to do the most amazing calls. He'd really get into discussing the body parts.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, sweat glistening off the thighs.
Yeah, yeah.
His buns are clenched over across. You know, great stuff.
Yeah. Which is what I think why there was so much homophobia in rugby, because they knew that what they were doing actually.
Yeah.
I
mean, we don't have a gay all black yet, but it's got to come.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have an openly gay all black yet, but it's got to.
It's funny, isn't it? The interesting gay all blacks. I mean, there's lots of gay women in the Black Ferns, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And no one gives a shit.
No.
They're like, oh, yeah, that's yours. Isn't that nice? We wish them well. Yeah. But there's this obsession with when the first gay all black was kind of weird, isn't it? It's this Victorian obsession with men having sex with each other. It's bizarre.
It's the weird curtain. It's the pink curtain waiting to come down in New Zealand rugby.
Yeah.
Do you get much death threats when you're doing homoerotic rugby commentary?
No, because there was only 73 people listening.
There was
a smallest audience. I mean, honestly, and it was radioactive, so the only people listening were other students, I think.
Oh, amazing. John Campbell, is there anything else, as we come to our close, is there anything else you'd like to share in the shower?
Like what?
I don't know. Anything on your mind?
This is a mental health thing, right?
It's a mental health thing. Anything. It's my safe space, mate. But you've come into it, and we're talking mental health. But is there anything that you feel about mental health that we haven't covered that you'd like to mention?
No, I've enjoyed. I mean, I don't know what I've said.
That's all right. We'll let you know.
Yeah. Thank you. But I think the thing that I always say to people, this is when you're talking to a young journalism student. I say, what have you got that no one else has got?
Mm.
And they fossick around and they say, I'm Samoan or something. Mm-hmm. I think, well, there's not a huge number of Samoans, but there's a few hundred thousand. Mm-hmm. So that's not the thing. I have a physical disability or whatever. But no. And I say, and this is my obsession now, that you are the only you there is. I'm sorry, this is such a glib thing to say.
No.
But I think that the more we understand the importance of authenticity and the uniqueness of our particular selves, the safer we'll be. And the more we celebrate it, the more we say it's okay to be you.
Mm.
And being you doesn't mean that you've got to pretend to be me.
Mm.
Being you means that you actually have the right to wear a hoodie in London, right?
Right.
The more we allow ourselves the critical, singular importance of being true to ourselves, the fewer mental health problems we'll have, I think. And the more we liberate people from expectations, from conformity, the more we say to people, it's great to be you, and I'm grateful for you. Then the safer we'll be, and the fewer alcoholics we'll have, fewer suicides we'll have. I genuinely believe that. Which doesn't mean you can allow people to be an asshole, but it does mean you can allow people to be themselves. Right?
Right.
So that's our obligation. That's why I spend my entire time, even though I speak nonstop, thinking, just today, try and shut the fuck up.
No, not here. This is the one place. Come in here. Look, anytime you've had a hard day at breakfast, call us up. You come down to the shower, swear your ass off, mate.
We'll put on some hip hop. It's almost like he's a white guy so full of shit. Where do you live? London. Yeah. So if I have a hard day at breakfast and I call you and say, I want to come sit down in the shower,
I'll fly over.
Will you?
I'll be there in 24 hours, right. Mate. We'll get the shower. We'll get some new Lynn chicken.
White guy.
Don't. You sound like my cousins now. You are Samoan. God damn it. John Campbell, thanks very much for your time, mate.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in, man.
Thank you. I love being in your shower.
Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower was produced by Charlie Bleakley and presented by me, James Nokise. The engineer is Blair Stagpole. The executive producers are Justin Gregory and Tim Watkin. Subscribe to our podcast however you just found this podcast. Or if you're listening on the radio, go to RNZ's podcast page and look for the chicken. And when you're rating us, only give us 5 stars. Remember, more stars, more chicken. If you want to share your safe space or comfort food, tweet me at James Nokise. If you need support, text 1737. Or for more resources on mental health, check the Fried Chicken webpage on the RNZ website. Faftailava Matewa.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.